It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Fresh off of Evan's unbelievable series on his top 50 rookie rankings, we are diving right in to another two-week series, which is based on an article that Evan, of course, you know who that is, Evan Silva, Roto World Superstar, at Evan Silva on Twitter, wrote about his top 20 fantasy breakout candidates for 2017. Big time story. You don't need to read because you can listen to him talk about it right here. We are presented by SeatGeek and Saks. Those are the two advertisers I'm especially into these days. If you ever want tickets for any reason, you need to have the SeatGeek app on your phone. It's like Kayak for plane tickets. Just use the code Ross so you get $20 off. Again, that's just an app. And then Saks underwear is so money. It's not even funny. I love the stuff. In fact, I really don't like the days when I don't have a pair of Saks to wear. I need to buy some more. We will be having the June MFL 10 draft relatively soon. I got to send all those guys the email to set that up. But we are already naming some of our contestants for the July MyFFPC.com contest and draft. $35 free entries are what you get. Frank LaGrassa, come on down. He sent me multiple Amazon purchases, as well as Robert Francis took advantage of multiple sponsors as well. We've got eight more spots that we will name over the next few weeks. You guys know what to do. Take advantage of any of our sponsors. Could be the Amazon banner ad at rostucker.com or SeatGeek app or Saks underwear, and forward me directly, ross@rostucker.com, the email, and say, I want in the high stakes best ball league against you two. Evan, let's get into your fantasy breakouts. Now, before we get into the list, we're going to start with the last guy on your list, Jonathan Williams, the Bills running back. But before we do that, I think people have a decent idea of what a breakout candidate is, but I want you to verbalize it first before we really dive into it.
Yeah, it's so these are not necessarily, this is not me like trying to convince you that, oh, this guy's going to break out. You know, this is not me saying that these guys definitely will break out. It's identifying players who could make big, big leaps this season. And for the most part, that will be opportunity driven. I think that opportunity is easier for us to identify and than identifying talent in many cases. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald was a guy who went three seasons without going over 1,000 yards. People thought he was completely washed. Jeremy Hill, as a rookie, looked like, you know, a transcendent talent, a massive running back who could break long runs and was pretty good in the passing game. And then, you know, the next year, Giovanni Bernard comes back and Jeremy Hill is no longer effective. And then in year three, Jeremy Hill looks like a bum. LeGarrette Blount for years looked like a bum. And then he goes on the Patriots and they know how to use him. And he leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns. Carson Palmer went from a guy who looked completely washed at the end of his career in Cincinnati, even retired, went to the Raiders, threw a ton of interceptions. The Raiders traded him away for peanuts to the Cardinals, and all of a sudden he's an MVP candidate in Arizona. Doug Baldwin went from a guy that a lot of people considered like a replacement level slot receiver who went undrafted to he's been a top 10 fantasy receiver in consecutive seasons. So our ideas of talent can waver wildly from year to year. But trying to identify guys who have an opportunity or if they were to come into opportunity might be able to make a big impact and help our fantasy teams, I think is critical. And that's really what this is about. It's not about me trying to sell you on this guy being, oh, yes, this guy's definitely going to break out. It's more like identifying players that have the potential to break out based on opportunity or opportunity that might be closer than it seems right now in May.
Right, and pretty clearly, Jonathan Williams fits your criteria with the Bills not matching the offer to Mike Gillisley. And so Jonathan Williams, he doesn't really even have that much competition in the backfield in Buffalo, unless you think of Mike Tolbert and the head coach having a relationship with Mike Tolbert and maybe feeling like, you know, Tolbert could be a decent complement to what Shady McCoy brings to the table.
Yeah, I would definitely say that Mike Tolbert right now at this stage of the offseason, and look, hey, if they go to camp and they don't see what they want to see from Jonathan Williams, that maybe they could go, you know, add D'Angelo Williams or, you know, some free agent running back off the street. And so this could totally change with a move like that. But I would say, yeah, definitely at this stage of the offseason, Mike Tolbert, who was on like a one-year, $1 million deal for roughly the veteran's minimum, would be the biggest competition for Jonathan Williams. But Mike Tolbert is, you know, a big, old fullback. And so I'm considering Jonathan Williams the heavy favorite to be the number two back in Buffalo, and it seems the beat writers think that as well. To really realize his potential, his max potential, of course, Jonathan Williams would need a severe injury to LeSean McCoy. But with that said, I mean, Mike Gillisley in the number two back role and LeSean McCoy only missing one game last year, Mike Gillisley was the RB28 in fantasy. And this team just runs a lot, period. Over the last two seasons, the Bills have consecutively finished number two in the NFL in rushing attempts. Their new OC, Rick Dennison, comes from the Gary Kubiak, Mike Shanahan coaching tree. You know, very balanced to run heavy offenses throughout that coaching tree. And I don't think that's going to change because of their personnel. They don't have receivers that they can count on, and they have a dual threat quarterback. They're going to be running the ball a lot. I also think it's fair to ask the question if Jonathan Williams might be a better fit for the new system than LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy is like a shifty creator. Jonathan Williams is a 6 foot, 220-pound, you know, put your foot in the ground and make one cut and go type of back. And if he's a better fit for the system, I mean, I don't think he's going to like overtake LeSean McCoy, but that could lead to more opportunities in the number two running back role. I think that Jonathan Williams, and look, we're starting off with guys that, you know, you should not be targeting until the really late rounds of drafts, but I think he makes a lot of sense for fantasy owners this year who are going to be going zero RB and loading up on receivers early and then taking a bunch of shots on running backs late. I think Jonathan Williams really fits that criteria.
The next guy on the list, and of course we're working backwards, starting from the bottom of your list, working all the way up to number one, is a former Bill. And I'm a little bit perplexed on this one, Evan. It is Robert Woods, who got a really, really big contract to go to the LA Rams. I look at it like they're looking at him as pretty much their number one receiver out there in LA. Yet nobody seems to feel the way I do, Evan. I think both of our MFL 10 drafts so far for this podcast, the Fantasy Feast, I think I've gotten Robert Woods in both of those. I mean, I'm looking, you got Tavon Austin and some rookies. What am I missing that you guys aren't taking him higher and that I'm scooping up Robert Woods later in these drafts every time? Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. I just think he's going to be the number one quarterback for a team that's probably going to throw the ball a decent amount.
Well, he'll be the number one receiver, not the number one quarterback.
Yeah.
But no, I'm with you. He's one of my like six or seven highest owned receivers in MFL 10s. You know, he's not someone that I aggressively draft, but when he's there in like the 13th or 14th round, you know, he's definitely on my radar and one of the guys that I want to pick up because I think he could see a lot of targets. He was a high volume receiver in college at USC. He was a guy who caught a ton of balls there. He averaged almost seven catches per game during his college career. And then he goes to Buffalo, which just was not a good – I mean, they never had efficient quarterback play. I mean, they had, I think, solid quarterback play with Tyrod Taylor, but, you know, Tyrod Taylor is not the kind of quarterback that is going to support a lot of volume at all for his receivers. And we just mentioned how often they ran the football. And that's because – you know, their team was built like that, and Robert Woods was primarily the number two behind Sammy Watkins. The Rams gave him $7 million a year, and he now has the chance to go back to Southern California, and or to L.A. Now he's going back right near where he grew up, and to be a high volume receiver. I mean, Sean McVay's offense is historically in Washington. Definitely lean toward the pass. You mentioned his competition for targets. Cooper Kupp, a third-round rookie out of Eastern Washington. Gerald Everett, another rookie out of South Alabama. Josh Reynolds, a fourth-round pick who was not a high-volume receiver at Texas A&M. I like his skills, but he's like a very, very much an outside perimeter receiver who never moved around. He played 85% of his snaps at right outside receiver. So he's not going to be a high-volume receiver anytime soon. I don't think that Robert Woods is an upside pick that is going to win your league, but I do think he's a guy that is a virtual lock to see 100 targets and could push for like 125 and, you know, is like a sneaky candidate for 80 catches. I mean, the way that Sean McVay is talking, he is really trying to recreate the Redskins offense in L.A. I mean – you know, the comparisons have been made between Lance Dunbar and Chris Thompson, between Cooper Kupp and Jamison Crowder in the slot, between Gerald Everett and Jordan Reed. And I think that Robert Woods would be the Pierre Garçon. I mean, they have even publicly compared Tavon Austin to potentially becoming a DeSean Jackson sort of player in their offense. And I think that Robert Woods would be the Pierre Garçon, and Pierre Garçon has seen a lot of targets during his time in Washington.
The next guy on your list is Falcons tight end Austin Hooper, who I know you've been tweeting about. You're pretty high on him. You like how young he is.
I like how young he is. I like how athletic he is. I like how he played as a rookie coming out of the draft. He was a top three spark tight end coming out of Stanford. Pro Football Focus gave him a top 10 run blocking grade among all NFL tight ends as a rookie, which is very impressive for a rookie to come into the league and already be an impact blocker. I mean, and he was very good as a receiver as well. I mean, he fits the mold of a complete NFL tight end. Jacob Tammy doesn't look like he's coming back. If Julio misses time, you know, there will be, and Julio had another foot surgery on March 6th. If he misses any time, there will be a lot of targets up for grabs in a high-scoring offense that has a good schedule every year. And I looked at, over the last 20 years, 11 rookie tight ends have topped 13 yards per reception on over 15 receptions in their first season. Last year, Austin Hooper and Hunter Henry both hit those marks. And the other tight ends from that group, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Gates, Zach Ertz, Aljay Crumpler, Martellus Bennett, Vernon Davis, Charles Clay, and the worst two tight ends on the list, Luke Wilson and Tony Scheffler, both athletic guys who, you know, just never kind of came together for him. But there are a lot of good players who fit onto that list, a lot of good fantasy seasons among those players. And I think that Austin Hooper he goes like 14th, 15th round right now in NFL 10s. And I think he has a lot of upside in a high-scoring offense.
The next guy on your list, Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz. You know, you don't usually have quarterbacks all that often on these breakout candidates. I thought that was interesting. Tell me about Wentz.
Yeah, we got two on this list. And Carson Wentz is first up. So let's just go back and revisit his rookie season. He looked really good in weeks 1 through 6. Now, this occurred, they had an early bye, And this occurred against some of the worst defenses in the league. The Browns, the Bears, the Steelers were not playing good defensive football when the Eagles played against them early in the season. The Lions had one of the worst defenses in the league. Redskins were a hugely disappointing defense last year. And then things kind of broke down for the Eagles. And I don't think it was just because of the schedule. There were a lot of other factors. I mean, they lost Lane Johnson, and they had major problems at right tackle. Their perimeter wide receivers were atrocious. I mean, they were using Dorial Green-Beckham and Nelson Agholor. Both of those guys could get cut this year. I don't think that Agholor will because of his contract. But I would say that Dorial Green-Beckham looks like he's going to get cut. And then there were mechanical breakdowns. It was very common last year to hear about Carson Wentz mechanical breakdowns, and he went and got that worked on with some quarterback gurus this offseason. We'll see if it sticks. But Carson Wentz finished fifth in the NFL in pass attempts as a rookie. He finished 12th among quarterbacks in rushing attempts. He's a really good athlete. That's something that people don't talk about with him very much. And then the Eagles went out and made big upgrades. First of all, they're getting Lane Johnson back. That's huge. But they went out and made big upgrades on the perimeter where they knew that they had weaknesses. They signed Alshon Jeffrey, and they added Torrey Smith, who I don't know that he's a net positive anymore at this stage of his career, but I don't think he could be worse than Dorial Green-Beckham or Nelson Agholor. And then in the middle of the field, they returned Jordan Matthews and Zach Ertz. I mean, they have Darren Sproles. I mean, they have the potential to have a multi-dimensional passing attack. And so if we can parlay some of that volume last year into increased efficiency, remember, he finished fifth among quarterbacks in pass attempts and 12th in rushing attempts. If we can just get Carson Wentz to be a little bit more efficient, I think he can take a big step forward in the second season.
How about another tight end? And that is Jack Doyle from the Colts. Obviously, a lot of people were looking at Jack Doyle with the trade of Dwayne Allen to New England.
Definitely. And last year, Jack Doyle, because he was sharing time with Dwayne Allen, played only 68% of the Colts' offensive snaps. He still finished 12th among tight ends in PPR fantasy points and 13th in non-PPR. He finished fifth among all tight ends in red zone catches, and he led all tight ends with over 70 targets in catch rate at 79%. So he was super efficient, super efficient possession receiver. Andrew Luck looked to him in scoring position, and now he's going to get a big bump in snaps. We talked about this in the post-free agency risers, that the new GM goes there and he does his due diligence on all the players that are currently on the roster and watches their tape. And he emerged from that thinking, you know what, we got to keep this guy. We got to keep Jack Doyle. He's a good player. And I think that he goes from being a guy who played under 70% of the Colts snaps to being an 100% player in their offense this year. That's what he was in games that Dwayne Allen missed last season. And I went back deeper and looked at Jack Doyle as a college player. He was super productive at Western Kentucky. Did not have great combine measurables, but he caught 162 passes in his college career. I mean, O.J. Howard only had 114 catches in his college career. Evan Engram had the same number of college catches as Jack Doyle, 162, but Jack Doyle had two seasons above 50 receptions. Evan Engram only had one. Obviously, Evan Engram and O.J. Howard are better athletes and better NFL prospects than Jack Doyle, but it's just a testament to the fact that Jack Doyle is a viable pass catcher. And we saw that last year in the NFL. I think that this year, if Dante Moncrief does not take a step forward in his fourth NFL season, I mean, he's been pretty disappointing up until this point. I think Jack Doyle ends up number two on the Colts in receptions and is like a sneaky candidate to catch 10 touchdowns, considering how much he's been leaned on in the red zone by Andrew Luck.
Let's get to another quarterback. You mentioned O.J. Howard. Now the Buccaneers drafted him. They also brought in DeSean Jackson. Been rave reviews of Jackson so far down there in OTAs. Another quarterback you have on your list is Jameis Winston as a breakout candidate.
Yeah, and to this point in Jameis Winston's career, he has finished, his best two fantasy finishes have been 11th and 15th. He was only 15th among quarterbacks last year. The year before, he was 11th, but that was driven heavily by, I think he had 5 or 6 rushing TDs that year. So we have not seen him maximize his potential as a fantasy quarterback yet. So I think that there is still a lot of room for growth. And no offense quarterbacked by Jameis Winston yet has finished better than 18th in the NFL in scoring. So all three of the offenses that Jameis Winston has quarterbacked in the NFL so far have finished in the bottom half of the NFL in scoring. Now, if you go back and look at the offense that DeSean Jackson has played in, three of the last four have finished top 12, and two of them have finished top 10. I think that DeSean Jackson is a difference maker, not only when he's catching the ball deep, but also just his mere presence on the field. I think it's going to make life easier on Jameis. It's going to make life easier on Mike Evans. It's going to make life easier on the tight ends that they have there, who I think are both going to play big roles this season in their offense. And one thing I also noticed, I looked on sharpfootballstats.com, which was founded by our buddy Warren Sharp, who's been on the show a couple of times. And Kirk Cousins had a 107.2 passer rating throwing to DeSean Jackson in the deep right section of the field. That happened to be, that deep right section happened to be where Jameis Winston posted his worst passer rating last season. Mike Evans runs most of his routes deep down the middle or deep down the left. And I think we're going to see DeSean Jackson jump into that role where he's playing mostly on the right side because that's where he's been for most of his career. And I think that we could see that the passer rating for Jameis Winston in that area of the field spike. I mean, they just didn't have anybody opposite Mike Evans last year, you know, with the exception of Cameron Brate. So now we're looking at Cameron Brate, who I think will play a lot of slot receiver for them this year. You know, he's only 235, 240 pounds. He's not like a big, bulky tight end, and that's one of the reasons that he can't block. I mean, he's too small. He's a slot receiver. And DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans on the outside, O.J. Howard will be their Y, their inline tight end. So that's a pretty attractive offense right there. And then you consider that last year they had one of the NFL's youngest offensive lines, and they're getting back J.R. Sweezy, who they paid a bunch of money to a couple years ago to help bolster that offensive line. So they have the makings of a very explosive offense, and I think we could see Jameis take off this season.
Speaking of taking off, there's a guy that took off earlier in his career and then last year was disappointing, and that is Cardinals wide receiver John Brown. Had to deal with that leg issue last year, but it sounds like they feel like he's back this offseason.
Yeah, and we did hear during the season that they had figured it out, but it's just, you know, they obviously didn't figure it out. So now we're hearing that again, which makes you a little bit skeptical. But they have had the whole off season to deal with it. I think one of the biggest issues that John Brown battled last year was he had a cyst on his spine and he had it removed in January. And he had complications from a sickle cell trait that caused pain in both of his legs and drained him physically. Here's a quote from John Brown just from earlier this month describing how he felt last season. "My body just wasn't in it. I couldn't do anything, really. I was just drained out. I was sleeping too much, and I couldn't eat right." I mean, he was in a debilitating situation, and he just couldn't be productive. The year before that, he went over 1,000 yards. He scored 7 touchdowns. That was with Michael Floyd in the lineup. Michael Floyd, of course, is gone, so there's opportunity there. This is John Brown's contract year. His opportunity is on the rise, and he's now the favorite for vertical targets in a vertical-oriented Bruce Arians passing game, where Larry Fitzgerald, of course, is now a slot receiver. And John Brown's competition for targets will be J.J. Nelson, who, look, I mean, he has big playability, but he weighs 156 pounds. And Chad Williams, who we really like in Dynasty, but he's a rookie out of Grambling State who very conceivably could open the season like inactive on game days if he's not ready to play on special teams. So John Brown is a really intriguing bounce-back, buyback candidate this year in fantasy leagues.
It looks like I skipped one by accident, Evan, and that is Lions tight end Eric Ebron, who, depending on what story you read this offseason, they either are really happy with and trying to get a contract extension done or really wanted to replace and wanted to draft one in the first round.
fair enough. Statistically, at least, Eric Ebron has gotten better every season. Last year, he posted a career highs in catch rate, 72%, yards per reception, almost 12 yards per reception, yards per target, 8.4. He just turned 24 last month. I mean, he's still a young player who should be in his ascending stage. He's been a top 15 fantasy tight end in back-to-back seasons. Last year, he finished top 10 among all tight ends in both catches and yards, despite missing 3 games. So the public perception on Eric Ebron is really negative, but from and I think that this is really tied to where he was drafted. I mean, they took him as a top 10 pick, you know, and it's just tight ends don't come along real quickly. He's never going to be a guy who's like helps you as a blocker. He's had issues with his hands. You know, I think he still had 7 drops last season. So he's been an inconsistent young player. But I think that a lot of that is tied to where he was drafted. I mean, O.J. Howard didn't even go until number 19, and Eric Ebron was a top 10 pick. So I think that some of the perception is just kind of unfair, you know, and not something that he could control because of where he went in the actual NFL draft. The biggest bump that Eric Ebron could potentially see this year is in the red zone, where Anquan Boldin just dominated red zone targets. You know, people don't think back and remember Anquan Boldin as a fantasy factor by any means last year, but you know, we were on him at certain points during the season. Like I remember on Thanksgiving, you know, you only got 4 games or 3 games to choose from, and you know, you're looking a little bit deeper, and you know, we noticed how often he was being used in the red zone, and we thought that he could maybe score a touchdown, and sure enough he did, and he was, you know, one of the best plays on that Thanksgiving slate. I mean, he just saw so many red zone targets last year. He was top 10 in the NFL in red zone targets with 22. He caught 14 passes in the red zone. He scored 6 touchdowns in the red zone. That's just a lot of red zone production. And if he's not going to come back, and to this point there have not been indications that they want to bring him back, then where is that red zone usage going to go? You know, I think that Theo Riddick could be a factor a little bit more in there. But, you know, Marvin Jones and Golden Tate don't really profile as great red zone receivers. And then you got the rookie Kenny Golladay, who maybe could be that down the line. But I think that Eric Ebron would be first in line to soak up a lot of that red zone opportunity. And he's primed for touchdown regression. I mean, despite finishing top 10 among all tight ends and catches last year, he only scored 1 touchdown. I mean, that's just kind of fluky. The year before, he scored 5. You add, you know, 4 touchdowns to last season's catches in yardage total. And I mean, he's a top 10 fantasy tight end pretty easily last year. So, and he's still a guy who goes super late in drafts. I mean, he goes 11th, 12th round. I've gotten him like almost at the 12th, 13th turn in some drafts. People just really don't like him, even though he's been pretty you know, pretty useful in fantasy. He just really hasn't put it all together for a full season, and people still hold that draft position against him, I think.
Last but not least for this week, in terms of your fantasy breakout candidates, and obviously we'll look at your top 10 next week, we've got Bears wide receiver Cameron Meredith, who really had a nice year last year.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. Cameron Meredith played quarterback until his junior season at Illinois State, and then he went undrafted in 2016. So he has really only spent 4 years at wide receiver, two in college, one as a backup on the Bears, and last year as a guy who didn't get on the field until week five. I mean, he wasn't a factor until week five. And then he goes on to lead the Bears in catches with 66 and in receiving yards with 888. He is a stunningly good athlete. I mean, if you just look at his athletic measurables, 6'3", 207, ran 4.49, 39-inch vertical, 10.7 broad jump, 6.71 three-cone time. 6.71 three-cone time may explain why he was so successful last year as a slot receiver. I mean, he has great quickness for being such a big guy. So he got a lot of his production at slot receiver, and I'll come back to that in a minute. This year, you look at his target competition, you know, who is he competing against in the Bears passing game? Number one is Kevin White, who has played four games in two seasons. Super ineffective when he's been on the field. Apparently had to relearn how to run this offseason. And, you know, I don't want to fully declare him a bust, but he's absolutely been a bust to this point, and my expectations are just super, super low at this point for Kevin White. I would be very surprised if he became a big-time player all of a sudden. And you know, the coaches are still talking about how he can't even run routes. Marcus Wheaton, Kendall Wright, Victor Cruz, three like reclamation projects who I think, you know, can maybe contribute as role players, but I don't think any of those guys is probably going to step forward as a number one. I think that Kendall Wright has the best talent remaining in that group. But the fact that they signed Victor Cruz after signing Kendall Wright, you know, it makes you wonder, has Kendall Wright not really shown anything to them in the early part of the offseason? And then at tight end, they have injury-riddled 32-year-old Zach Miller, blocking tight end Leon Sims, and Division II rookie Adam Shaheen. So it's just they don't have a whole lot of target competition. The biggest two concerns I have with Cameron Meredith, and I mean, I love him as a prospect. I own him in Dynasty League. But the biggest two concerns are the potential for musical chairs at quarterback this year with Mike Glennon and Mitchell Trubisky, and then how much of his production came in the slot last year, which really we shouldn't hold it. I should not be holding that against him, but he had so much of his production in the slot. I think over half of his production occurred in the slot that, you know, moving to become a true outside receiver who's going to have to deal with bigger time cornerbacks, you know, that could become a bigger obstacle for Cameron Meredith than, you know, last year, like went against the Redskins and just ripped up Kendall Fuller, you know, the rookie slot corner in Washington. Now he's going to have to deal with Josh Norman, you know, in that same sort of scenario. So, again, you know, like I said at the beginning, this is not necessarily a list of guys who I definitely think will break out. It's just trying to identify guys who might break out and take another step forward at this stage of their careers.
I love it. And I'm already looking forward to 1 through 10 next week. And we actually have time for an email question today. Let's do it.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
And Evan, because you're mainly asking Evan on this podcast. I love that we're either too lazy or too cheap to get the guy to do the sounder that says, ready to ask a Roto World superstar a question? It's time for Ask Evan. Anyway, I know why you guys, if you're writing for the podcast for Fantasy Feast, I know why you want it. It's Evan. I get it. We got Ken Coates today, Evan. He took advantage of the Amazon banner ad over at RossTucker.com, clicked on that bad boy, made a couple purchases, and had this question. Short story. About 3 years ago, when I first started using 80% of my free time on fantasy football, I had just left a meeting at my son's school. A counselor was trying to talk to me, but I had just started listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. When I seen her, I said, sorry, I got Ross Tucker talking in my ear. Oh, the motivational speaker, she said back. I said, no, the football player, he got some good podcasts. So just to let you know, there is people in Toronto. Ken, my buddy Ken has really interesting grammar and punctuation that makes this enjoyable. In Toronto that know of you outside of football. Here's my question. By the way, I doubt somebody in Toronto thought of me as the motivational speaker. That would surprise me, Ken. As long as you send in a sponsor confirmation, Ken, I'm going to read it anyway. You don't need to lie about people knowing about my motivational speaking in Toronto. That would surprise me. Anyway, question, and you know who it is for. In rounds 7 to 14 of an MFL 10 or 25, who's a good running back that could, you know, catch, would be left? What about the new rookies? I'll be back maybe for an MFL 25. Keep up the great work and be nice to Bri. So he's looking for a running back in the middle rounds of an MFL 10, which is an interesting question, Evan, because having been in a couple of these drafts with you now, by round 7, most of the good running backs are gone. I mean, people hit the running backs pretty hard where you look at it, it just doesn't seem like there's really very many very appealing at that point.
Absolutely. I mean, could not agree more, man. Like, the running backs are gone in a hurry, and people reach for running backs, and I do it myself. But if you were going to kind of fade that approach and go with, like, just hammer receivers and, you know, maybe get Gronk early. You know, maybe take Aaron Rodgers. I don't like to do that unless he really falls. But if you're going to take that approach, I think that there are some interesting mid to later round running backs that can be big time producers for you in PPR leagues. And the first two guys that stand out to me are Theo Riddick and Danny Woodhead, who both have like 75 catch seasons in their potential range of outcomes. Theo Riddick has done it before. And the one thing that really worries me and bothers me about Theo Riddick is that he's coming off surgery on both of his wrists. That's a little bit scary, and I'm starting to back off drafting him a little bit. I want to hear some positive health reports on him. I mean, his game is tied so much to his wrists, and you know, we can't hopefully they're as good as new, but he had surgery on both of them. That's a little bit frightening. And then Danny Woodhead, who, again, he has done this before. You know, he's been in two of the last four seasons, he's been a top 12 PPR running back. And, of course, he missed the other two, essentially. But he goes, like, middle eighth round usually, and with no Kenneth Dixon there for the first four games, I think he has a chance to carve out a huge, huge role to be an every week starter in PPR leagues in the first month, and then to continue to be, you know, assuming that he is effective, to continue to be a big player a featured player in a passing game that, you know, you look at the receivers right now, and even the tight end, they have a lot of quantity but very little quality at tight end. They just don't have a lot of guys to throw to right now, but Danny Woodhead is a guy to throw to. And then in the ninth round, I've started to draft Adrian Peterson, who, I mean, I have no idea what he has left, but I know that he has huge, huge upside in a high-scoring offense. And I really like him right now as a ninth round pick, as like my RB4 in a stable of four backs. Frank Gore is more of a floor play. The biggest competition for him right now is Robert Turbin, who's been like a journeyman replacement level back. And then the fourth round rookie, Marlon Mack, who, you know, is explosive but raw. And then Matt Forte. I mean, no one wants to take Matt Forte this year. You know, he goes 11th, 12th round. Bilal Powell, I've started to see him go like fifth round. Matt Forte is not dead yet. And when you can get him 11th, 12th round, I think that is a fantastic value. So Theo Riddick, Danny Woodhead, Adrian Peterson, Frank Gore, Matt Forte, all guys that I would be looking at in that 8th to 13th round range.
I love it. Great answer to a question from Ken Coates. Hopefully we can get to an email question next week as well, in addition to your top 10 fantasy breakouts for the 2017 season. Absolutely love these series, just like I love those emails and those of you that spread the word via social media. It's much appreciated. You don't even need to retweet me. Just retweet Evan, at Evan Silva, or Bri, at RTF Podcast. If you want to give me one, that's cool. It's at Ross Tucker NFL. If you're a Facebook person, facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL is where you can like what we are doing here on the Fantasy Feast. Downloading this podcast on multiple devices multiple times is for studs only, so don't do that unless you're a stud or a studette, as well as the iTunes rankings and comments. So appreciated. Really help us with our iTunes algorithm or whatever. Other than that, I'm totally stuffed. I ate way, way too much last weekend. Two and three quarters of gigantic ribeyes. Are you kidding me? Ribeye steaks at one sitting. Anyway, long story. I'm stuffed. We're done. It's over.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar. Because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.